Today is Friday, January 11th, 2019, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, has the U.S. withdrawal from Syria begun? We'll talk live about the situation. Also ahead, it's been over 100 days since journalist Jamal Khashoggi was murdered. We'll go to Capitol Hill to remember his legacy. And we'll introduce you to some high-tech devices for the disabled. All this and more on today's International Edition. The partial U.S. government shutdown is in day 21. On Thursday, U.S. President Donald Trump traveled to the Mexican border to continue to make his case for a border wall, the primary obstacle to reopening the government. Joining me with the latest on the shutdown is VOA's White House correspondent, Patsy Whitaker-Swara. Patsy, thank you for joining us. We're hearing more and more about the president declaring a national emergency to fund the wall. What does this mean, and what is his justification?
So in 1976, Congress passed what's called the National Emergencies Act. So this act allows the president to pronounce a national emergency at his discretion. It's really interesting that the act offers no definition of emergency. It doesn't lay out the required criteria. It also doesn't demand the president to prove anything. So technically, the president can declare national emergency, and there's actually no burden of justification, according to some legal expert, even though the administration will for sure give a justification, which is exactly the narrative that they've been laying out, which is that there is a humanitarian and national security crisis at the border. This will be a politically risky move if indeed, that is what the president will do, because Democrats will paint it as executive overreach. It would also be quite a violation of constitutional norms, and it would establish a precedent for future presidents to get his demand. But at this point, with everybody dug in, it may be the only face-saving way out where everybody can say that they've won and everybody can say that they've tried.
Well, the Democrats are threatening a court challenge if he decides to go the national emergency route. And certainly, Congress does have some say in controlling the purse strings, even if the money does come from the Pentagon. With all this going on, does this mean the shutdown continues indefinitely?
Well, at this point, the answer is we don't know. But, I mean, I don't think there's no way that the shutdown will continue indefinitely, because I think it will end one way or another. I don't see any way it will continue. Nobody wants it. The cost is too high. The political cost is too high, and the economic cost is too high. But as you said, it will be met with legal challenge all the way perhaps to the Supreme Court. And what also makes it more complicated is that the U.S. Constitution doesn't really say much on emergency powers. So it could be tied up for a long time, perhaps all the way to the end of the Trump presidency, some legal experts say. And even if at the end the Supreme Court were to rule for President Trump to proceed, he would probably still face more litigation with property owners over eminent domain and whether the government may use that to force them to sell their land. So this is a complicated mess going forward as well.
That's a very good point. There's nothing simple about this. Now, the FBI is among the federal agencies impacted by the shutdown. Their union spoke out about it. What is their concern?
Well, the concern is that the shutdown is stopping them from doing their job, which is keeping the country safe. So things like intelligence gathering, you know, recruiting and maintaining informants, testing evidence, this all need resources and money. So I can't imagine being an FBI agent meeting an informant and saying, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do it today because I'm furloughed. I mean, I understand where they're coming from with this concern.
Now, the shutdown is just now beginning to have an impact on people outside of Washington. One thing that's been mentioned is that the economic rating of the United States could be impacted if this goes on too much longer. What are you hearing about the impact beyond Washington?
Yes, that's correct. So Bank of America, Merrill Lynch economists have cut their forecast for fourth quarter growth to 2.8%, and perhaps even more, even towards like 2.2% if the shutdown continues. There's also been an independent study that says each week of the shutdown takes away 0.1% of economic growth. It has certainly impacted consumer confidence, investor confidence. That's what we're seeing in market gyrations lately. And, you know, it's just impacting a lot of people. Like, we don't always consider this, but the government is involved in a lot of aspects of the American people. The food, for example, is no longer being routinely inspected by Food and Drug Administration. Small businesses can't get loans. Farmers may not get their subsidy checks. Mortgage applications may be delayed. Civil cases in federal courts are delayed. These are all costs, economically, socially, and politically. So, again, we hope that at some point they have some sort of consensus and get their acts together. But really, at this point, nobody knows what way out that could be coming in the foreseeable future. And more, this national emergency idea may become the only viable option at this point.
VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitakaswara, thank you so much for joining us. This
My
is
pleasure.
International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, two Reuters journalists in Myanmar lost their appeal Friday against their conviction and 7-year jail sentences. President Trump's ex-lawyer agrees to testify before Congress about his dealings with the president. The United States plans to jointly host a global summit focused on the Middle East next month in Poland. And former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn faces two new charges of financial misconduct. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA reports that its Hubble Space Telescope, with help from a natural phenomenon called gravitational lensing, has helped astronomers discover the brightest object in the early universe. Gravitational lensing is like a natural zoom effect that uses enormous galaxy clusters to magnify distant galaxies behind them. The object, located about 12.8 billion light-years away, is a super-bright quasi-stellar object, or quasar, that shines with a light equal to 600 trillion suns. Quasars, considered to be the brightest celestial objects in the universe, are generated when supermassive black holes, at the center of galaxies, devours material so quickly that a buildup of friction and heat produces powerful beams of light. Scientists say the newly discovered quasar was found at the heart of a young galaxy as it was in the process of forming some 1 billion years after the Big Bang. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. The U.S.-led coalition in Syria is preparing to remove troops from that country. There are roughly 2,000 U.S. military personnel in Syria. Joining me with the latest is VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden. Jeff, we've been getting mixed messages today. We heard hours ago that some U.S. troops had started to withdraw. Now that may not be the case. What's going on?
The latest that we're hearing from defense officials is that no U.S. troops have actually withdrawn from Syria. There were reports that started coming in on the overnight, and then a statement that came out from the coalition itself earlier this morning, which talked about how the coalition has, quote, begun the process of our deliberate withdrawal from Syria. And it seems that there was some confusion at first that troops were involved with that. But the defense officials now telling us at VOA no troops are being withdrawn yet from Syria. There was some equipment that came out of Syria. And we have reports from groups on the ground like the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which said that they saw a convoy of about 10 vehicles with equipment leave from a base in northern Syria and head into Iraq. But as of right now, the Pentagon is saying U.S. troops that are in Syria, the approximate 2,000 troops there to help in the fight against the Islamic State terrorist group, they are staying put.
The status of the U.S. troops in Syria has been a big news story for the last few weeks. What can you tell us about the current deployment of U.S. troops, and if when they are really withdrawn, what does that mean to the balance of power in the country?
Well, there's still a lot of questions about how and when this is going to happen. Remember, it was last month in December when President Trump first announced that the battle against the Islamic State was over. Islamic State had lost, and it was time for, he said, our boys, our men and women to come home and come home now. Then we started hearing some caveats, some clarifications from the administration and from the Pentagon, and most recently from President Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, who recently visited Israel and Turkey and met with Turkish officials. And from the Pentagon, we've been hearing that any withdrawal of these troops is going to be conditions-based, which means the events on the ground have to be right, have to be met, so that the troops can come back safely. And also what Bolton has talked about and what others have talked about, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, is that there needs to be some protections for the Kurdish forces, the U.S.-backed Kurdish forces who have been fighting under the name Syrian Democratic Forces. And those forces have been pivotal in rolling back the Islamic State's self-declared caliphate. They've said there has to be protections for those. Remember, it's a complicated situation because while the Kurdish forces have been a U.S. and coalition ally in the fight against Islamic State, some of those forces overlap with another group called the YPG, which is a Kurdish People's Protection Unit group, which has links to another group, the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, which is considered a terrorist organization. And so Turkey considers many of these same fighters who have been fighting against Islamic State terrorists in terms of Turkey. And so the Turks have been saying it's time to go in. A lot of, and this is complicated too, because of, as you said, where the U.S. forces are distributed. Many of them are located in bases across the northwestern part of Syria, some of them near, not that far from the Turkish border. So if the Turks were going to go into Syria and take on not only the remnants of the Islamic State, but also some of the Kurdish forces that they deem to be terrorist forces, U.S. forces could be in the way. The U.S. has some of its own bases there. They also sometimes share bases or share areas with the Syrian Democratic Forces, many of which are Kurds. So a very complicated situation on the ground and a complicated situation diplomatically.
Now, if when the U.S. troops do withdraw, what can we expect Russia and Iran to do once there's that vacuum?
Well, that's the multi-billion-dollar question. How does this all play out once troops are actually pulled out and not on the ground? Because while the U.S. doesn't have a lot of troops there, it has sort of created a stabilizing presence in the fact that all the other actors are not necessarily doing what they'd like to do because they don't want to mess with the U.S. They don't want to create an international incident. Remember, the U.S. and Russia have this line of deconfliction that they've been using to make sure that Russian operations in support of the Assad government in Syria don't conflict and they don't get involved with U.S. forces in the area, so they don't come to heads. The Turks have been talking to both the U.S. and the Russians. The Russians recently said that they had started doing some patrols in and around a town called Manbij, which has been a bone of contention between the Turks and some of the Kurdish forces, and the U.S. has been doing joint patrols there with the Turkish forces to try to keep the peace as they move toward an arrangement on how that town will be governed. Again, it's a town in Syria. So there are all these players that have interests, and how they go about pursuing those interests could change with the absence of U.S. presence there, mainly because then they don't have to worry about getting into a firefight or into some sort of conflict with the U.S. forces.
Well, it certainly is a complicated situation. We're just going to have to end it there, but we'll be talking more in the future. That's VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Selden. This is International Edition from VOA. U.S. lawmakers on Thursday called for Washington to hold Saudi Arabia accountable for the killing of Washington-based journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey. But President Trump has held back from criticism of the crown prince, saying the relationship with Saudi Arabia is too important to risk.
We're not going to give up hundreds of billions of dollars in orders and let Russia, China, and everybody else have them. It's all about, for me, very simple. It's America first. Saudi Arabia, if we broke with them, I think your oil prices would go through the roof.
The U.S. Senate passed a resolution in December condemning Saudi Arabia for the murder of Khashoggi. And now, 100 days after his death, he is receiving renewed attention, with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calling out President Trump's decision.
If we decide that commercial interest should override the statements that we make and the actions that we take, then we must admit that we have lost all moral authority to talk about any atrocities anywhere, anytime.
2018 was a deadly year for journalists, including 5 shot and killed in Maryland. The U.S. sets the example for treatment of journalists worldwide, said that state senator Chris Van Hollen.
The absence of a strong voice in freedom of the press in the White House puts in danger journalists around the world, copycats, authoritarian leaders around the world who quote the expression fake news and enemy of the people and use that as an excuse to lock up journalists in their country.
Two jailed Burmese reporters are part of a troubling movement towards less transparency. Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff.
When we look around the world, it is hard not to conclude that the trends are getting worse, not better.
Remembrances of Khashoggi also received Republican support. Congressman Will Hurd.
I realize the difficult places that y'all have put yourself in.
Even in his rural South Texas district, Hurd said Khashoggi's death got the attention of Americans who had never before considered the worldwide dangers for journalists.
This has spurred a conversation in South and West Texas. Most people in South and West Texas have a hard time producing, saying his name. A lot of people have come up to me and say, why is this important? It is causing a lot of people to remember why our press is so important.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson was on Capitol Hill for the event. She spoke with VOA's Lori London, and they talked about why it's important to mark the 100th day since Mr. Khashoggi's death.
Absolutely. So they used this 100 days since the death of Khashoggi to really gather together lawmakers from both sides of the aisle, as well as some of Khashoggi's Washington Post journalist colleagues, for a really nice remembrance ceremony up on Capitol Hill, talking about his lasting legacy. And one of the elements that really stood out to me covering this event is that a lot of lawmakers said that their voters, their constituents in their districts, actually realized that press freedom was an issue because they had heard Khashoggi's name. So that really was interesting to hear, that a lot of voters were considering this for the first time, that journalists are out there risking their lives for the story.
Right, and the U.S. standing as far as safety for journalists has gone down in the past year.
That's right. We actually had somewhat of a surprise visit from the new House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at this event, and she had strong words for President Donald Trump for not calling out the Saudi crown prince on this issue. She said that there are some things, some values that America stands for that shouldn't be based on relationships relating to currency. So she was very clearly alluding to the fact that America has a dependence on Saudi oil and that the president was reluctant to call out the crown prince because of that.
So this was basically like a commemorative day to remember Mr. Khashoggi on the 100th day to continue to remind people that, you know, journalists risk their lives to get to the truth and how important, you know, freedom of the press is to democracy is basically what I'm hearing you say.
That's right. You know, we have this unfortunate tendency in Washington to have this one big story that consumes all of the attention here. And then we very quickly move on to the next thing. And to be honest, right now, that next thing is the government shutdown and border security.
Right.
I think this was really an opportunity to just come back to this very important issue and remind people that even if we're not paying attention, journalists around the world are still risking their lives.
And I think if anything good can come out of this horrific tragedy, that maybe, you know, in death, Mr. Khashoggi can make a difference in the lives of journalists in the future and their safety and just bringing this much needed issue to attention.
I think that absolutely will be the case and will be the case for a lot of lawmakers up on Capitol Hill.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Still to come, high-tech solutions for people with disabilities when VOA's International Edition returns.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
¶¶
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Apple's latest iPhone models are facing huge discounts in China as retailers try to sell the struggling devices. That comes as the top-of-the-line Apple smartphones have posted poor sales in China. Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite has more.
Fresh signs Friday that Apple may be struggling to shift iPhones in the expected numbers. Chinese retailers have slashed prices for the handsets by as much as $118. At least six major sellers, including JD.com, are offering discounts according to Reuters checks. Unusually, the price cuts cover Apple's latest XS and XR models. Media reports claim Apple has cut wholesale prices for the handsets in China, though the US tech giant won't confirm that. Apple has been trailing local rivals like Huawei in the world's largest market for mobile phones. Chinese-branded handsets often much cheaper than the US products. Last week, Apple issued its first revenue warning in nearly 12 years, citing poor Chinese demand among the reasons. But it's not just the iPhone maker to suffer. Overall demand for smartphones is on the slide in China as economic growth slows. Shipments of the handsets down over 15% in the country last year.
That is Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite reporting. The Consumer Electronics Show continues in Las Vegas this week. VOA's Kevin Enoch tells us about high-tech devices for the disabled.
The Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, is a showcase for the world's best technology. As expected, a big topic is how many things are now wired and online. But CES is also focused on finding technological answers to questions regarding health, wellness, and robotics. That's of particular interest to people in the handicapped community. This year, CES highlights how technology can make their lives easier, too. Like this device that plugs into any electric wheelchair and moves by reading the user's facial expressions. Creator Paulo Pinheiro says the Wheelie 7 was inspired by a smile.
A few months ago, I was at the airport. I was waiting for my flight, and I saw this girl in a wheelchair. She could not move her hands or her legs, but she had a great smile. You know, those kind of smile that you cannot stop to think about it. So we knew that we could use our experience in robotics and deep learning to translate that smile into commands to control her wheelchair.
Users like Eric Ingram say there's a bit of a learning curve, but the expression-controlled wheelchair works.
The wheelchair was a little awkward at first. Using facial expressions instead of other manual forms of movement was a little confusing, but once you use it for a decent amount of time and get comfortable with the controls, it becomes a lot more natural and easy to use.
People with vision disabilities have new options as well. Jeffrey Fenton from eSight says his electronic glasses can open up a whole new world for the vision impaired.
So you could be living with, in Rosa's case, 20 over 200 vision. And when you put on eSight and you look ahead, you could see the fine detail on a piece of paper or in someone's eyes. It's remarkable.
Rosa Henderson was impressed by her time with the eSight glasses.
I'm seeing things that I've never seen before with the unit. So it's like, it's revolutionary for people who are visually impaired.
And for people with limited ability to grasp objects, Scott Kim has created a leather glove that helps increase a person's grip.
This device helps them to be able to close their hand by themselves so that they can do basic activities like toothbrushing, opening the door, or just grabbing a coffee cup.
Neo Mono will go on sale this year and cost about $2,000. The other products are already available on the market. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
It's just amazing how inspiration will strike you when you least expect it, like in that case, the airport. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. For the latest news 24/7, please visit us at voanews.com or go to our VOA mobile app. My thanks to our studio team, Patrice Martin, our director, and also our engineer, Zubair. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Have a great weekend.